always hated Christmas.
Onto your computers and perhaps your illegal radios. I understand that some of that going on. And stay tuned for Bathurst Pier's Broadsides, the December 16, 2004 show with special interview with Mayor Michael Rutkin.
Enough Cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian guy.
down in brown. Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown. Is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out impalas and carried out mini trucks as the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara Street. And beautiful Latinos strut by on 6 deep in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean.
That was Downtown by Grito Serpentino. This is Bathrob Spears' Broadsides. That's a blast from the past. Used to play that song a lot several years ago when I did this show. It's 2 hours now, civil rights on the streets and around the town. If you hang with us, maybe even in the studio, I guess we have to take our civil rights back. Don't get them given to you. You got to get them. We'll be going until 8 o'clock tonight. If you want to call into the show, the number is 427-3772-427-FRSC. If you want to jump on the internet, you can join us at pagesincolor.com. Off-air number, if you want to leave a message for me, is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. And if you want to call the studio, leave a message for the collective here. You're interested in a PSA or you want to join up or you got some stuff to give us, 427-4523, 427-4523. A lot of this information you can catch by going to the website at www.freakradio.org. That's what we are streaming on, and rumor has it that some clowns at 101.1 FM are questionably transmitting our signal. Come on, you guys, let's not be illegal about this. Anyway, call in, 427-3772. We got stuff coming up. Special interview with Mayor Mike Rotkin, also known as Motormouth Mike. I'm not sure who's faster on the draw with the lips, either he or I, one of the two. He's the mayor, though, and I'm just the outside critic. We met with him, Becky Johnson and I, about 3 days ago, and he gave us a long taped interview. I'm going to play about half that interview, maybe more, today. Didn't tend to have a guest on today who had a special expose of Dominican Hospital, but unfortunately that's going to have to wait for his lawsuit, so we'll hope that that comes down the pike and then we can hear more. I'm also going to be playing a little bit about my lawsuit. You may remember that's the Heil-Krone lawsuit. We'll be talking about that in a minute, but first, of course, as always, let's see who's on the phone here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
I actually wanted to be off air.
You did you? Well, you're just going to have to wait. Can you hang there?
Sure.
Alrighty. So that is, of course, a phone call that we're going to have to take in just a moment. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Let's not quite set up for this whole situation, so I'm going to have to kind of fake it and grab the appropriate tapes here, which is always a risky business when I'm doing it. But here, let's begin with a little bit of retrospective. You may remember there was a coronation of the new city council in late November. At that coronation, afterwards, we all went across the street to the Civic Auditorium, where we all ate, well, some of us ate little fruit pastries and chocolate num-nums and so forth in the antechamber of the Civic Auditorium. I did a couple of interviews with locals on the forthcoming political scene. I'm going to play those now while I find out just what's going on with this caller. So check it out, and I will be right back. And here we go.
So I was congratulated by Scott Kennedy a moment ago, saying that I'm not sure. He said they had a pool as to who guessed I would get the fewest votes, and I think Rotkin won. And of course, I was announced getting 40 votes. I think Coral got 15 or something.
13.
Lucky 13.
I thought the paper said you got a couple hundred.
And I asked Scott about this. He said, no, those were the other throwaway votes. And he added, like yours, as he walked off.
Well.
He can be cruel.
Well, Seamus has been known to be very cruel.
Tony.
I hope he has a good time being the chairman of the PLO.
I'm curious.
We're with Sherry Connable, who's munching a few of these delicacies. She says it's going to be interesting to see the new city council. Anything particular you're looking forward to?
Well, I just think it's hard to know where Ryan's going to come down on issues, where Tony will come down. I just think everybody's kind of unsure about what direction this council will go.
But isn't there the same majority that on some of the key issues that there's been all along? I mean, for example, the hotel. Isn't the hotel pretty much a foregone conclusion?
I don't know. I don't know much about that.
Of course, our old friend, the sleeping ban, will no doubt stay in force, though we're both dead.
So I want to ask you, when did the far part of Delaware Avenue get reposted? When did that happen?
Let me ask Becky. Hey, Becky. Sherry is wondering when the far part of Delaware Avenue got re-striped.
To get reposted, and now you can't park there at night anymore. Do you know?
I think it happened like about 9 months ago. But they went through and did this whole sweep, put a whole bunch of signs up that they hadn't had elsewhere. But yeah, I remember seeing that. I don't know exactly when it went in.
But it can't be
worse.
Neil Cirillo or Danette Shoemaker might know. I don't think it did, no. If it did, I wasn't aware of it. You're hoping, Sherry.
But the new council will address really strongly the issues of where does staff power begin and where does it end? What belongs to council and what belongs to staff? Because at this point, apparently staff is making decisions that don't belong to staff. They're policy decisions. They're not routine administrative or maintenance decisions, and that needs to be clarified.
I hope you're not suggesting that Dick Wilson has more power than he should have.
Well,
for heaven's sake, bite your tongue, Connable.
I think there are some staff members in certain departments that seem to be, in my opinion,
lording it over the rest of us,
usurping their authority. So,
Scott Graham, what do you think of these ridiculous charges?
What charges?
That the staff somehow may, in some circumstances, be, shall we say, exercising inappropriate power.
Well, like, say, the redevelopment agency. It has no oversight by the public. Its budget is outside of the general fund budget. And It just basically operates on its own. The council sits as the redevelopment agency, but they only assume that role for 30 minutes once every 2 weeks. And the redevelopment agency staff, headed by Seal Cirillo, basically do whatever the hell they want. Like right now, they're in the process of stealing the property from Ron Lau and giving it to one of Seal's good developer buddies.
Well, I see Ed Porter right behind you. Surely he will change this situation.
Well, he might be the only one willing to on the council.
Well, what about our new fighting firebrand, Tony Madrigal?
Well, only if the wind tells him, you know, the wind's blowing that way, will he also blow that way.
Wait a minute. Are you suggesting that Tony is less militant? After all, you heard him give a speech in Spanish tonight.
Well, except that's not the language that we speak here in this country. So I kind of dismiss that as grandstanding.
You old cynic, you. Do you expect anything from this city council?
No, just we're going to end up wading through as much bullshit as we've ever had to, especially with the next year's Rockin' as mayor, Mr. Lay the Shit on Thick Rockin'.
You mean Rockin' the Liar?
Rockin' the fork-tongued, bullying bastard that he is. I mean, the speech he made when he accepted the mayorship was so, if anyone that knows and watched him in politics, every bit of what he said was total bullshit from what he actually practices.
Well, I know that at the afternoon session, I asked him repeatedly a question, and he promised to answer. He actually interrupted me at one point and had a little byplay with Mayor Kennedy, former, thank God, Mayor Kennedy, over the issue of, you know, oh, let Mr. Norris stop. He's agreed to stop if you only let me interrupt him. And I said, interrupt me. Tell me the answer to the question. The question was, why do you have to give $87,000 to the Coastal Hotel to make an application? Is there a deadline that wouldn't allow the next council to do it just as easily? This is a lame duck council. Why are you spending that kind of money here and now? And his answer was, well, it's not going to obligate us to spend the money. In other words, he gave no answer on the issue of is there or isn't there a deadline. So I was extremely frustrated and extremely hurt, but I pursue this nonetheless.
Well, I was a little surprised that tonight when there was actually two agenda or three agenda items on the city council agenda, that you didn't insist on speaking on those three items on the evening agenda.
I don't think they would have allowed me to do that.
You have to go up there and say that, you know, according to the laws of the state of California.
That's correct, actually.
I've actually seen you do that before and was told that you wouldn't be allowed to speak.
That's true. That would have been interesting.
I think that, you know, you're slacking off here, Robert.
I could have spoken on the issue of Scott Kennedy's what? His final remarks, or the issue? Or the issue of who would be vice mayor and who would be mayor? That's true. That's a very legitimate issue.
All of those things. You could have went up and spoke before Kennedy and Premack spoke and said what a rotten job both of them did while they were in office. So that when Kennedy went up there and lied about all the great things he'd accomplished, you know, the people would have had to reflect, well, who's telling the truth there, Robert or Seamus? And so, you know.
Seamus?
Well, that's what a lot of people call Scott Kennedy, you know.
Really?
Yeah, it's from his old huckster days and Ireland selling broomsticks to dirty old ladies.
Oh, for heaven's sake. We're talking to an interpreter whose name is?
Virginia Olguin.
Virginia, you're with the Clearview Court folks.
Correct, I am.
Did you come as an interpreter or as a friend or as a person politically interested?
I came as a friend of the people that were affected by that.
What's happening at Clearview Court?
Apparently, they're still fighting the situation, but it seems like they're on the losing side.
Are people selling their trailers and hitting the road?
No, not yet, but apparently they are very disappointed because a lot of them are not getting their... They're not getting the contract that they were expected to get. They were supposed to get... Every time the contract overturned, they would sign and they would continue to live there, but apparently they're going to eliminate it after a certain amount of years. They're going to totally eliminate it, and they're going to have to get out.
What a surprise!
Isn't that amazing? The shocking situations that happen around here.
What about Tony Madrigal, the new council member? Is he likely to do anything about this, booster as he is of Latino culture and all that?
I think he is. He's definitely very energetic and enthusiastic about all this, and I think he's probably... Hopefully, I hope that he's going to be on that side, on their side, which I think he is. It just depends on how influential the other people are going to be towards him and him towards them.
You are such an optimist, Virginia.
I am. I'm trying to be.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to interrupt this because we do have a caller. Hi, caller.
Hi, Robert. How are you?
Good.
I wanted to respond to something that your taped interviewee said.
Which one?
See, that's the problem because Free Radio is having this little identity crisis, and there's like a minute and a half delay, and by the time I actually heard it, like your tape was like a minute and a half forward, and now even much more time has gone by, but... The person you were interviewing, I think it was Scott Graham, I guess.
Right, probably, yeah.
And he was referring to... Now, I want to preface this by saying, like, I don't want to come off sounding as, like, some ardent supporter or anything of Tony Madrigal, but I just, you know, you call a spade a spade. When you see it, when you hear racism, you got to call it. And I heard him make a really racist comment, and I can't let it go unchecked. I feel like it needs to be said and put out there, and maybe Scott can call in and clarify his statement. But I only wasn't even half paying attention, and it just caught my ears kind of perked up. And when he said, he was, I guess, talking about Tony Madrigal made a bilingual speech at city council, and you questioned whether he had been some sort of, I think the question was whether or not he was grandstanding or not by his, you know, by his speaking out in Spanish and English. And he said, you know, Scott said something like, well, English is the language that we speak in this country. And it's just like, I'm sorry, but that may be true now. But, you know, more and more, you're going to have to, like, face up to the facts of an ever-changing fucking demographic, not only in the state of California, but the whole country. And, in fact, almost 30% of the people in this country now speak Spanish as a primary language. And so, I mean, it's really imperative that our leaders and us as grassroots activists, and myself included, learn to speak Spanish and be able to communicate with one another. And I don't think it's grandstanding at all. And again, I'm not an ardent supporter of Tony Madrigal. I think we need to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. He just got elected. And, you know, to cut him down, like, for speaking out in Spanish, I think is wrong, and I think it's racist, and it really pissed me off. So thank you for allowing me to speak my mind.
Let me just respond to that.
Sure.
First of all, I agree with you. I think, and I agree with part of what you say. I agree certainly that, I mean, I'm the one who demanded Spanish translators during the Dolphin Lee crisis.
Right.
We were really pissed that they weren't providing them. We finally forced them to do that, or, you know, embarrassed them into doing that, or they did the right thing one way or another. This issue was raised. Madrigal made a, you know, he translated some of what was said. He gave an acceptance speech in English, then he gave an acceptance speech in Spanish. And I have no problem. In fact, I think it's a good that one translates into another language. The question of whether he's grandstanding, however, is a separate one. And I think that had to do with what he said and how he presented it. And
well, that's fine. You can take issue with what he said.
Right.
But the fact that he spoke out in Spanish should not be – you shouldn't take away from somebody. And, like, he was denigrating – you know, your guest, your interviewee was denigrating Madrigal for that, and I think that's wrong. And I think you need to, as the interviewer in the moment, need to speak out about that kind of thing while, you know, and, like, not let that go unchecked on the air. I think it's really wrong. And anyway, I'm kind of venting. So,
okay.
If Scott's listening, maybe he want to call in. It's a minor point, really, but it's the minor thing. It's the like minor details that really get me. So anyway, that's all.
Hey, thank you, man.
Thank you.
All right. Bye bye. So I doubt Scott is listening. It's quite a trial to get Scott to listen, much less to come into the studio. Quite a victory. That's why I kind of try to ambush him with my tape recorder. But let's see if I don't know if this time we have any more of that. There may be a little bit more discussion at that coronation, as I called it, the feast of the fat across the street, where actually everyone was allowed to come and have little pastries and celebrate the inauguration of Mayor Mike Rodkin and what is it, Vice Mayor, was it Cynthia Matthews? No, Emily Riley? I'm not even sure who the Vice Mayor is at this point, but it doesn't make me feel good no matter who it is. Let's see if we got anything more going on.
It's Anita of Clearview Court, but she's off hours. Anything quickly for free radio? She's tired. Can I call you later? September 2nd is the next meeting and we'll be discussing...
Planning Commission.
The Planning Commission will be talking about the issue of the tower next to Clearview. I just want to get this in before the vacation.
Yeah, it's the 51-foot, 690-space parking garage and conference center next to Clearview.
Give you a place to park, Anita. Now, come on.
No, it's being presented as public parking, but it's not. Yeah.
How can people, can they write the Planning Commission and support? What can they do?
Come on down December 2nd and speak to it.
What time, do you know?
7 o'clock.
And where will that be?
Council chambers.
And we've been talking with? Anita Webb.
Anita Webb.
Thanks, Anita.
Okay, it's about 7 o'clock. We're at safe number 43, I think we are. And it's about, it's about November 24th. Nice Wednesday, a little nippy, but could be worse. We're talking with Dan Hemingway. Hey, Dan.
Hello there.
What's cooking? You say that charges against you have been dropped for high treason and felonious assault. What's the deal?
Actually, it was for suspicion of under the influence of methamphetamine, where the police found me asleep after they took me to jail waiting for a test.
Wait, you were sleeping, but they accused you of being under the influence of methamphetamine.
Actually, the police dropped it when they saw me asleep waiting to take a urinalysis, so they... still kept my court dates, and after four court dates, I finally missed one, but it just happened to be the one where they were going to waste my time and say they dismissed it without me there.
So, the ultimate outcome was?
I got it dismissed without even being there, which was great. Because
that sounds
I'd been to court four times already with absolutely no evidence, except they said, a rookie had said that my pupils were a 0.2 or a 2, something like that. I don't know, but that was the only evidence they had. But evidently, as the public defender told me after the first one jumped out on me, that in order to get the DA to even look at what kind of evidence is in the case, you have to go to court three, four times just to get her to look at it. And so that was my case.
How many times did you end up going to court on this arrest? Which, was this connected in any way with your status of being houseless at the time?
Actually, I was living in my car, but I had a good job and was looking for a place when I actually got fired, as that was part of it. I got arrested and couldn't make phone calls to my boss even, so he had it with me after that. And actually, after having to go to court four times, I don't think I would have been able to keep a job and do all that time just to find out that they would dismiss it with no evidence in the end.
What kind of work were you doing?
I was actually working on Jack O'Neill's new house, working for Timberline Construction, where we were doing Japanese-type architecture, where we notch whole redwood trees in a very environmentally friendly fashion, where we only harvest the trees from my boss's property, and they're only trees that are in clumps and so forth like that.
So how many hours in court have you spent all in all with this business?
I would say about... 12 hours in court, and I would have spent more to find out at the end of the day that there actually was no need for me to be there in the end.
Wow. And you say you lost your job, you went to jail. All of this was on suspicion of sleepy use of methamphetamine?
Yes. They actually had a problem with me because I had sand in my eyeball and they didn't let me wash it out, took me in for urinalysis, and then I took a paramedic ride to Dominican Hospital where I got treated for a scratch cornea for not being able to even access water to get sand out of my eyeball.
Remembering now, this was the, they accused you of trespassing because you went used somebody's water to wash your eye out on. What were the details of that?
It was a private road, so I wasn't allowed to be there, but there was no trespassing on it. It's basically a lot of people in Santa Cruz County have the need to feel their road is private. I don't know why anyone, you know, privacy in a house or home is fine, but in the way of an access road, it's kind of sometimes necessary to cross boundaries there.
So this was, how deeply were you into other people's territory? Were you a mile away from the public property? Were you a block away?
I would say I was about 20 yards away from public property.
I see. So you dared to stray onto private property, and hence you got your just desserts, four court appearances, a scratched cornea, a night in jail, and a good lesson, eh?
Yes, yes. Actually, that rights aren't upheld unless there's some outside force to help, because I basically got no phone calls, no medical care or anything like that from the police department when I was there. And they said that I did notify them of a medical emergency before I was booked, but nevertheless, they didn't want to foot the bill, so that's why they released me to a paramedic.
Are you outside now, or are you indoors?
I'm in my car now, and I'm having trouble, you know, getting another job, being homeless and all, but I think it'll all pull through in the end. I think I'm going to become a professional welfare recipient, and I'm going to see if these people behind you would share their food with me.
Take a look and see. I understand we're a little bit low on the food tonight. The person who usually comes through with the soup didn't, so I wish you luck.
Thank you. I'll need it.
Thanks, Dan.
Uh-huh.
And that was SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, event number 43, which happens every Wednesday in front of the New Leaf Market, 6 to 9 or even 10. Even in the cold weather, those musicians sure like to strum and sing. I noticed that last night. I lost my voice, actually, but luckily I got it back. You're tuned to Free Radio on the net at www.freakradio.org, or for the courageous, listening in at the 101.1 FM, which we, of course, are not responsible for. Certainly not. No, no, no. We'd never do that. But I'm glad somebody is, if they're doing it, by cracky. In any case, the phone number here is 427-3772. I'm kind of fencing with pages in color. That's the internet connection you have with our show, in case you don't want to call by phone, or because if the phone line is busy, that's www.pagesincolor.com if you want to join the chat room. And we're doing a little chattering there. I'm waiting to hear from a couple of the chatsky chatterers. While I am, how about a little of this, and then we'll get back to, I think we're either going to move to the U.S. Mayor's Conference Report on Hunger and Homelessness, which came out a couple days ago, actually, or maybe even more recently than that. Or, if that seems a little too dry, I'm going to go directly to our old pal Mike Rotkin, who, as I said, had an interview. I interviewed him, I should say. It was Tuesday morning, right before the last city council meeting of the year. But in the meantime, let's hear this particular number from the old Hail to the Thief 2. So stay with us here.
Dick Cheney is explaining why we need to invade Iraq. He says we gotta hit them, we gotta get them before they can get us back. I'm not even gonna bother to argue over that, 'cause it's clearly just a bunch of BS to distract us from the facts. It's about oil.
It's about oil.
It's about greed.
It's about greed.
It's about rich white men getting richer. It's about fear.
It's about fear.
And control.
And control.
Of those barrels of black gold.
Texas tea.
Yeah, step up, folks, to another war when we never really say what we're fighting for. It's easy to pretend we're defending our native soil. Put it in the headlines I want to see it in big lights. Hello, it's about oil. George W., how I love you and your tough Texas cowboy way. Congressional approval is for weenies. You go to war whenever you please. And if the citizens raise some questions, just use the T word and log on. And then it's back to business as usual. Priming the pump. It's about oil. It's about greed. It's about this rich country getting richer. It's about fear and control of those barrels of black gold. Yeah, step up, folks, to another war where we never really see what we're fighting for. It's easy to pretend we're defending our native soil. Put it in the headlines. I want to see it in big lights. Hello. It's about oil. And we the people, we shrug and sigh. Too bad about your country, but I like to drive. If I bury my head and close my eyes, maybe the oil never will run out. Yeah, we're living in a weird sort of heaven. St. Peter is holding a gun. All the angels are dressed in business suits. The disciples are on the television. And our Lord says, do unto others as you need to do to come out on top. And after church, we all go to Walmart. The 11th commandment, thou shalt shop. It's about oil. It's about greed. It's about using way more than we need. It's about fear and control of those barrels of black gold. Yeah, step up, folks, to another war where we never really say what we're fighting for. It's easy to pretend we're defending our native soil. Put it in the headlines. I want to see it in big lights. Hello, it's about oil. Yeah, put it in the headlines. I want to see it in big lights. Hello, wake up. Greetings, earthlings. It's about oil.
And that was, again, from the album Hail to the Thief 2, It's About Oil. And, in fact, the singer was... who is the singer? I'm looking... They were actually mixing a lot of their stuff together. And Amy Martin, guitar and vocals. And Michael Marsalek on percussion. Lawrence Duncan on sax and vocals. And Beth Youngblood on fiddle and vocals. Going to have some more of that as we roll through the show. You're tuned to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And let's get to the Rotkin interview. Mike Rotkin is the mayor for the fifth, I believe it's the fifth time. He was first elected to the city council in 1979. That was back in the days when he actually voted for rent control. Ah, the glorious days. He also voted for the sleeping ban, of course, which is consistent of him, at least. And he still, of course, supports the sleeping ban, the law that criminalizes the poor outside after 11. I visited his office on Tuesday morning. Not with the aim of really persuading him of anything or lobbying him particularly, but simply getting a reading on where he was and letting the community have a sense of, at the beginning of his, is it fifth term? Anyway, at least his fifth term, where he stands on a number of issues that are important to me. So I asked him a number of questions. I had with me activist Becky Johnson, who was silently listening, and then I sat while she silently, I should say, while I silently, and she... questioned him about issues. She took the homeless issues. I took the non-homeless issues. And we kind of covered the most of the map with Rotkin. He gave us more time than we'd thought he would. And indeed, he tends to go over because he, I think it's fair to say, likes to hear himself talk, as I do. And he was an hour and 15 minutes late initially, so I think he felt a little guilty. So he let us continue our discussions with him, our questions with him. I'm just going to begin without any further discussion. You can listen in. If you have some strong comments, I will stop the tape and we can talk a bit about it. But let's hear what Mayor Rutkin has to say. The initial part of the tape is a little quiet, but it gets louder soon, so be patient.
It is about 10 to 10 on December 14, 2004. I'm in the office of Mayor Mike Rutkin, and with me is Becky Johnson. It's the day of a city council meeting. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah. Okay, well, so here's the deal. I'm going to cover the non-homeless scene. Becky's going to cover the homeless scene. And just trying to get up to date. I'm not trying to. We know, I assume, many of your positions are what they have been in the past. Maybe not. But I don't want to find out what they are. So I want to get current.
Okay.
I may interrupt you because I realize we probably have some kind of limited time. And you're, you've got to think of a council meeting.
Sure.
You've got to be ready for breakfast for us. So. So let me just start running through some of the stuff. You've probably seen this resolution, the U.S. out of Iraq resolution. It's pretty much identical to what was passed by Arcadis. Not identical, in fact, you've got a few changes to that. Arcadis was broader at Afghanistan. You probably read it, it's been two council meetings, two oral communications.
Yes, I've seen it.
Any reaction to it?
Well, my view has always been that the city council should focus most of its attention on local municipal matters, but there are some things that really compel us to speak out on broader national and international issues, and certainly the war in Iraq is one of those. And I think the question for us is we need to sort of be persuasive that what we're doing is speaking for the majority of people in town, or sometimes even the vast majority of people in town.
Let me interrupt briefly. I'm sorry to do this, but I've been doing this frequently. This similar resolution was presented in April of 2003, first by Ed Porter and then by Scott Kennedy, and both of them were withdrawn. The war has gone on for a year and a half. It's not on the council agenda today. Do you anticipate it being on the agenda soon? If so, why? If not, why not? Again, if you can, be brief.
I was just trying to answer that. I think basically if we get some organizations or a large enough individuals asking us to do something, probably, I would guess, in January or February, that council, it's time to sort of renew our outrage about what's going on there and our sense that it's a complete failure. And, you know, for all I won't listen for the time, all the problems with it, you're quite aware of them. The resolution calls them out.
Oh, January or February is what you're thinking.
Yeah, I think that would be the case. And I
would support that then.
Yeah, sure. And I want to emphasize that I don't think these are the kinds of things that the council members just cook up and bring to the council on our own. I think we want to have a sense that there's a significant number of people in town that think that's a really good idea. So that's something you have to try to weigh. There's not some formula number or something. But I think there's enough sense that people in this town are...
And Arcata Vets for Peace did it, and I think they're also concerned about doing it here.
Yeah, and I just think that it's, you know, again, looking for these organizations to sort of speak out on the question asked and request of us that we take action. We of course won't be speaking for everybody in town when we do this. There's a minority of people who think the war's...
You've answered my question. Let me move on to the next one. I mean, and these are, you know, this could be discussed at greater length. No, no, I understand. Okay, now there's an issue of medical marijuana has been brought up to you in the past because a year ago at the Light Up for Arnie or Smoke Light Up with Arnie rally, you suggested you would be open to and were concerned about problems with the medical marijuana law that. And if I misstate you, please clarify. Do you agree that there is no medical marijuana distribution center open in Santa Cruz right now? WHAM, since it's not a distribution center because it's a collective, can't really serve more than the 300 people that it actually contains.
Yes.
And for a year, I've been ragging on you over free radio about getting this done, but neither you nor any other council member has taken any steps. It's because you don't like the way I part my hair, or you're not concerned about the issue, or you have some other reason.
I think the issue here is that it needs to be a group of people that wants to do this and gets organized and is willing to sort of live within the framework that the city set out for, you know, what makes this a legal operation in our town. And so what people, that people want something in the abstract is not enough to make it happen. It's like many social services that we fund. We don't organize, go out and organize a child care program. People have a program and they come to us and they say, here's our program, we'd like it funded.
But there's been a concern that the existing law, which you were part of certainly passing, perhaps I'm not drawing up, I don't know, in 2000.
You helped
actually drew up the law.
That's correct.
Did you consult with the Corrales in doing so?
There were, among others, that I talked to. Yeah, I talked to lots of people, and I did that in city attorney, but also lots of citizens.
Did you talk to Kate Wells?
I believe Kate Wells was one of the people I talked to at that period, but I'm not sure about that.
Because she's been concerned, as has everybody but the Corrales, as far as I know, that there is no way, reasonable way for people to open a distribution center in the city, given the kinds of restrictions. Not so much the location, it has to do with the process and the uncertainty. That you know, some neighbor can cook up an objection, and then down goes the center, as happened with twice with the, you know, the Santa Cruz Cannabis Pharmaceuticals. Was that part of your concern when you spoke about up on this issue in November of last year at the Light Up with Arnie rally?
Well, just to put the stuff in proper context, I don't think opening up one of these things next to a school is a good idea. And I think to measure that, if anybody that's taking that as the measure of whether the council is likely to approve it, would probably be misjudging our intent.
How about reopening the, let's say, the Maple Street house? Would you object to that? That was where, of course, there was a legal place for about 8 years, 5 years.
I don't actually... this was, you're talking about a long time ago. It was
before from 1992 to 1998 or so.
Yeah, there's no particular place at this point that I want to identify as the right place.
Any objections to a downtown location? I mean, some people were thinking that that was one of the concerns of the council.
We didn't want to do it on Pacific Avenue because we didn't want to create a zoo, you know, in terms of, like, you know, people that have these medical problems and stuff should be able to go somewhere where there's some reasonable expectation.
But is the entire downtown area ruled out on Pacific Avenue, but the entire downtown area?
Our law rules it out only in the downtown Pacific and the side streets that lead out two blocks or something, is my understanding. So there are other places downtown where you could open one of these.
So no one's approached you in the last year with any reform proposals about that would allow the 3,000 people in the county who have medical marijuana concerns to be able to access a distribution center as they did for a long period of time in the 90s?
Nobody's approached me in the last 10 years.
Andrea Tischler hasn't called you?
No.
Kate Wells hasn't contacted you?
No.
Okay.
Let me be clear. Just like a child care center, people need to put together a project, think about, you know, how it would work, what rules they're going to follow, where they want to put it, and so forth. And I'm happy to meet with people and talk about those kinds of issues. What I'm not going to do is design the place or set out for people how it should all work or something else. That's the kind of thing that people in the private sector, in this effect, you know, people that want to run these centers should put together. And they
gotcha.
I'm very sympathetic, and I think the council majority would be sympathetic to one of those proposals.
Okay. An oversight commission for the redevelopment agency has been proposed, and you've kind of rejected the idea at City Council when it's been mentioned. I've mentioned it a couple times, and so have other people, like Scott Graham. You still oppose an independent oversight body for the redevelopment agency?
I don't think there's anything more democratic than the City Council running the redevelopment agency. I think in communities where they have appointed...
So the answer is yes, as far as anything.
Well, that's the question, Robert. I think in communities where there's redevelopment agencies appointed by City Councils, they're less democratic and they tend to be more pro-business than the City Council is likely to be.
I understand. I'm not really trying to cut you off. I'm just trying to get through this stuff. I just want to see if you change your position, that's all. So the answer is no, you don't support an independent agency.
No, I think the City Council is the best group.
Okay. What about an independent audit and evaluation of the city manager and city attorney, who are pretty regularly get their positions rubber-stamped every year?
Again, I think the best people to make that judgment are the folks that have been voted for by the citizens of this town.
So the answer is no independent group other than the City Council on this issue?
Correct.
Other cities like San Francisco have strengthened police review even in the face of budget cutbacks. You voted to eliminate the CPRB and then presumably acquiesced without protest from the cutting of the so-called independent auditor's budget. Will you continue to oppose independent police review in Santa Cruz?
I would oppose spending any more money on that function. I think the way that it's organized now is a way that actually does provide independent oversight over the police.
By the way, you mean a $20,000 a year independent auditor who reviews the internal affairs examinations that the police department performs on itself?
And a public safety committee that reviews those reports and actually makes judgments about whether the project process is working well.
This is the same public safety committee that's canceled its December, January, and February meetings. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, some questions about city council process. I sent a letter to Chris Krohn when he was mayor, which you may have read, although you weren't on the council when this arrived, but yeah, I'll pass it on to you. Because today at City Council in closed session, you'll be receiving the North versus City of Santa Cruz, what I call the Heil-Krohn case. And that concerns decorum as to whether doing this at City Council, even for as brief a time as I, raising the hand in a Nazi salute, indicating you're acting like a bunch of fascists, not so much as I'm a Nazi, hi, let's get together, is considered basis for evicting someone from City Council. As mayor, will you be doing that?
Well, I don't want to encourage people to come down and give us Nazi salutes on a regular basis, so I'm not sure what the question is.
Well, the question is, do you consider that act in and of itself sufficiently disruptive for you to order a person from the room as a sort of a precondition? For example, Councilmember Fitzmaurice made that threat and indeed carried it out through Christopher Krohn on March 12, 2002.
I think an honest answer is I wasn't there. I don't know what that looked
right,
like.
If it happens again.
If somebody came up and raised their hand in a Nazi salute for, you know, quickly and went away and didn't stand there in the front of the room disrupting the meeting, I don't think that would be disruptive, but that's my personal view.
Okay.
I don't encourage people to do it because it does, you know, all of a sudden, if it raised the level where all of a sudden there were 50 people standing up there making Nazi salutes all the time, it would be disruptive for our meeting and then action would have to be taken. So if one person did it one time, as apparently might have been the case in your circumstance, I doubt I would have seen that as a decorum problem.
I'm just trying to get some indication for guidelines for people for the next year. Let's see here. How do you feel about cutting back city council members' speaking time as state and federal legislatures do in order to facilitate, streamline the city council process and allow, let's say, potentially more public input time?
I think generally we provide quite a bit of public input time, and it takes the council time to actually make reasonable decisions about things. And so the premise of your question troubles me.
Let me ask you this. Do you favor limits on time for city council members to speak, as formal limits as you have in some state and the federal legislature?
No.
Thank you. Do you favor expanding public comment on items such as, let me ask you first, expanding oral communications? The reason I mention this is because, if, for example, the County Board of Supervisors and at the Santa Monica City Council, any individual who wants to speak for, let's say, 3 minutes is allowed to do so, even if there are many individuals. They simply put the individuals at the end of the council meeting beyond the first half hour. Would you be in favor of that?
I don't think so. I think at this point, it depends. If we start to find that there were way too many people to speak in oral communications on a regular basis and stuff, then I'd find a way to expand that time. My sense is that the half hour we provide with 3 minutes each seems to work pretty well, and most people get to speak. In fact, most people get to speak over and over again every other week and say the same thing to us that they've said before, so I'm not sure we're not hearing views from the public.
So, in other words, the fact that if the same person showed up again, you would feel that that was an indication it's not necessary to expand the public speaking time because of that person's having heard that person's comment before.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. It's like if I felt that there were people who were trying to speak that we never heard from and there were points of views we weren't getting, or that people had different ideas, that even the same person came back with a new point and new ideas and stuff, and they were regularly being excluded from communicating with us, I think that would be a problem. But that has not been the case.
So, in other words, if there are more than 10 people who want to speak at oral communications at any one time for 3 minutes each, you would not at the present time favor allowing oral communications, let's say, to go either at the end of the meeting or an expanded time at the beginning of the meeting. Because generally, for example, the last meeting, there were several dozen people who wanted to speak, most of them SEIU members, but there were many people, many of us were not able to speak, and you weren't, of course, the mayor at that time, but it was, in fact, instead of allowing more people to speak, putting time at the end of the agenda, oral communications time is actually cut for each individual. And a number of people were not allowed to speak, I'm sure, who had never spoken before.
Well, as I said, I don't think generally we've had a problem with people not having access to the council. So to brief answer your question, no, I'm not in favor.
Okay. I appreciate your brevity. I'm just trying to, you know, clarify here. Okay. There are some who have suggested allowing the public to address questions directly to the staff, or perhaps through the city council to the staff, and then allowing the staff to answer those questions. So that the individuals who are skeptical of the staff or have more information or inquiries about them can put those things forward. Would you favor a public speaking time which they could the staff could be addressed questions and then answer them? There could be some kind of minimal dialogue in that way, as the staff would be accountable not just to the council but to the public.
No, the staff right now will meet with the public and answer questions they have in terms of the public meeting. I think it's appropriate that people direct their questions to the public body, the council. The
answer is no.
Yes, the answer is no.
Yep, the answer is no. Okay. Would you be in favor of allowing the public a second round of brief follow-up questions at City Council after an initial council debate? Often people in the public come up with new ideas after a council's discussion, or this, you know, it's been that, some kind of dialogue there.
I guess my view is that the council should try and have at least preliminary discussions before we open the public hearing so people have some idea of where the council is likely to be going. If I understand the question you're raising, that, you know, it doesn't help if there's an item introduced, the public says what they have to say, and then the council has a discussion that goes off in a totally different direction, and then the public never has a chance to respond to what the council is actually thinking about. So that's my way, I think, of handling that, would be to sort of have preliminary discussion, then open the public hearing, so people's comments will be directed towards the real issues that the council is confronting.
But you don't favor a second, say, briefer period of public comment in the after initial council discussion?
We already have a problem with our meetings running way too late, and I don't think there's time to do that.
Answer is no.
No.
Okay.
Yes,
the answer is no. Terry Frank of the First Amendment Coalition of Sacramento says that the former Mayor Kennedy's practice, indeed of other mayors, perhaps even yourself, of cumulative warnings and of requiring those who spoke at prior council meetings to give way to new speakers violates state law, since every council meeting is de novo. You can't hold people responsible for a list of what happened at the previous meeting. Will you respect this particular perspective, or will you continue the traditional council practice of demanding that people who spoke in the previous meeting stand aside for those who want to speak and haven't spoken before?
I think he's wrong in his interpretation of the law, and I think that most people who are asked to stand aside still get a chance to speak almost 90% of the time.
The answer is yes. Your answer is no.
No, he's no.
The question was, will you change this practice?
No, I don't think I'm in favor of changing that practice.
Okay, thank you. In the past, you frequently supported moving items on the City Council consent agenda to the end of the agenda. Yeah, I don't know if you've initiated it. I think you've certainly been a supporter of this. Of course, this affected me personally when I've raised items, because often this puts items either at the end of the afternoon agenda, several hours ahead, or at the end of the evening agenda, 7 or 8 hours ahead. Will you continue to do this on a regular basis, or will you allow people to talk on consent agenda items at the time when it is usually a part of that agenda?
I think the council and the mayor managing the meeting always have to try to figure out what's the most efficient or reasonable way to run the meeting. What I will not do is move things to the end of the item to sort of get you out of our way or something, if that's what your concern was. And generally, there's no desire to kind of like move the items away, because my idea is that when members of the public want to speak on items, we generally should handle them as soon as possible rather than making them wait. So I think I'm sympathetic to the concern you're raising, but I don't want to imply that we would never move the agenda items around, because often in managing a meeting, you just have to do that. You've got a staff person that has to leave for some particular reason. You've got to handle their item sooner, or there's some big public item you want to deal with a huge crowd of people, so you put off an item that only has one or two people that want to speak to it. So that's going to continue to happen, but I will certainly try and avoid anything that gives any flavor that somehow you're being sent off to the late hours of the night or something.
Okay. Again, this is about the Heil-Krohn lawsuit that's coming up today, and it's not really about the litigation, it's about the future practices, because one of the things those of us who are doing the lawsuit are concerned about, and it's not just me, it's attorneys who volunteered their time and supporters, is that there be a understood definition in City Council of a broader sense of the kinds of criticism that are permitted. Now, I know that you've become quite angry at protesters in the past who have, in fact, arguably disrupted council meetings. For example, when the Homes Not Jails chant was raised in 1993, you called the members of the chant fascists, as I remember, because you felt they were disrupting the public process. They were excluded from council, and you barred them from returning. I don't know if it was you, or it may have been Mayor Coonerty at the time. On the other hand, there's been a much tighter definition of what constitutes indecorous behavior under the Fitzmaurice decorum rules, for example, using the words Führer and flunky at the oral communications mic, was cited by Fitzmaurice as the basis for banning a person from City Council. He's made that statement at City Council, and in fact, he was the person who initiated this Heil-Krohn business. Krohn didn't notice the Heil. Fitzmaurice did, and raised the issue. So my question, I'm sorry to be so long about it, is will you publicly acknowledge, and perhaps you already have, that whatever the past situation, you will not regard a gesture from the audience as the basis for evicting a member of the public unless it is of such volume and persistence as to block the view of others or materially disrupt council business.
Let me just answer the question. I'll be as brief as I can.
But you already have actually answered it somewhat.
Just to be clear, that my view is that the content of people's speech when they get up during the 3 minutes, they can use whatever words they want within reason. Decorum there probably has more to do with persistent use of foul language or something that's so disruptive of the meeting and people's sense of reasonableness and stuff that you have to interrupt it. But I just say for the record, I don't think you've ever done that. Get a sense of the scale I'm talking about. It's not going to be a single word or something that somebody uses, like Führer or something else. People can say what they want during their 3 minutes, and I don't tend to cut people off for doing it. People do have to end when their 3 minutes are up, and they'll be evicted if they don't do that. And people certainly can't interrupt other people's speaking by making verbal utterances or yelling at them or something when people are having their 3 minutes or when council members are speaking or whatever. They should be allowed to have their piece, just as anybody from the audience, when they speak their 3 minute thing. I do think that it's not fair to sort of make a comparison between these questions and the issue of like a bunch of people chaining themselves to the benches. If you're thinking of, I think that's what happened.
The Homes Not Jails, that was actually 3 years later. You're talking about the lockdown.
But, where people clearly come up and, start chanting or disrupting the meeting, I think that does bear on the question of fascism, because you got a duly elected city council trying to hold a public meeting, and people come and decide that they have an issue that's so important that they have the right to disrupt the regular agenda. And I think that is, in fact, dangerous to democracy. So, because, of course, as long as you agree with them on their issue, you think they're doing wonderful stuff. But if you think if you disagree with their issue, then you think they're, destroying the public process. So my view is people will have a chance to speak their piece during their 3 minutes. I don't tend to cut people off, and as much as possible let people say whatever they say in any way they want to say it, as long as it's reasonably clear. And I do want to avoid situations where people make strong personal attacks on individuals rather than attacking they're able to attack the council and say whatever they like, but strong attacks on individuals, particularly members who aren't even present in the room and stuff, I think is somewhat problematic, because it ends up...
On that question, will you allow individuals who have been so attacked to make a response if that attack comes from a council member and the attack is made by name?
Well, generally it's been my view that if people get attacked as individuals, they have a right to respond and stuff. Of course, it's not always the case if the person gets up at the microphone and says stuff and then someone else responds to what they've said. I don't think they get a retort necessarily, no. That's the question you're asking. But somebody who hasn't said anything and is just minding their own business somewhere else in society, and a council member decides to unload on them, of course that person, I think, should have a chance to respond to the comments.
I noted that in I guess it was October or November, you wanted to maintain regular council meetings. I think it was October, but Mayor Kennedy cut back the council meeting so that there was one, I think, regular meeting and one irregular meeting. One of the concerns that I raised several years ago was holding meetings at inconvenient times of the day when working people can't attend, or on days when council meetings are not normally held. You are, I don't recall there was a problem with you on this, and I take it you tend to try to maintain regular council meetings, regular day.
Yeah, that's my view, is we should hold the meetings on second, fourth Tuesdays, start in the afternoon at 3, have a break for dinner, and meet again at 7 until we get done.
Okay.
I mean, we do take a break in August, we don't meet, and we also only have one meeting in December. That's been true for 30 years, but other than that, we should be meeting every Tuesday.
And Santa Monica, excuse me, as I understand it, I'm not sure, but this is what I'm told, there's a practice of allowing members of the public to introduce items onto the agenda. Here in Santa Cruz, you have to do it through a council member. Would you support a process by which members of the public could get items on the agenda in the absence of a council member's support?
No.
Okay. There has been some...
No, I don't support
briefly.
That. It'll be brief. I don't support that because you have an elected council that the public has put in office to try and take care of issues that are of concern to them. And their total agenda could be derailed by individuals that decide they know what's more important to the city. So I think it's important that the elected officials actually put things on the agenda.
Mayor Riley, for example, in the past has tried to silence people booing in the audience or making negative expressions in response to different things that are said at the podium or things the council has said. inasmuch as such expressions do not materially disrupt the meeting, would you continue her practice of, for example, cutting off the mic when I came up with a "fuck the police" T-shirt, when the response, when the police had given a ticket to a man for having just that message on his hat in the John Maurer case, or when individuals are, you know, obviously dissatisfied with what the council does and say boo or hiss, not sufficiently volume to stop the council, but to definitely to demonstrate their opinion. This has been censored by mayors in the past. What's your view on this?
I definitely would stop people from booing speakers at the microphone because I think it intimidates folks. I think people should be allowed to speak their piece and not have other people attack them from the audience for it. I think the council should have thick enough skins to have people boo their comments, not while they're speaking, obviously, but after the, you know, at the end of the decision gets made or at the end of whatever. So I'm not clear exactly what the question is. One thing you can't...
You can answer the question.
Yeah,
that's good. That's good. And I'm running into the small print here. What about the right to video council meetings? Often, in the past, people have been able to video council meetings from different places, behind the podium, in front of the podium, and so forth. And there has been, under Fitzmaurice, a whole set of decorum rules was put in which banned media from the council area behind that rope. Often media people have found that a useful place to be, particularly video media people. I'm thinking of Becky, of course, and her video camera, but also other video people, people doing projects, in order to get both the reaction of the audience and the reaction of the council, as well as the person speaking at the mic, because you can't get the person on the mic from the front unless you do it from the front.
I'm against having people come back where the council is actually needing to do video stuff.
The, at a pie, perhaps?
No, I think it's just disruptive of the stuff. I do think, you know, you can get Community Television tapes all of our meetings, and you can get copies of all the stuff that they do. You can get views of the audience and the council. You know, then I'm not against people video, obviously videotaping or filming our meetings, but I think the idea that they would come back where the council actually sits would not be helpful.
You've given out three phone numbers you can be reached at. One of them your home, one of them your work, and one of them your council offices, which is trying to be quite accessible. Yet on the other hand, your hours, aside from occasionally being late to meetings, are only essentially 2 hours per week. It's 2 hours per week, Tuesday and Wednesday. This is a significant cutback from the 6 hours per week that Kennedy and I think Riley had. Is there a reason? Obviously, you're a working person. You're an instructor at the university, and that's the reason you can't do that.
Yeah, basically, I have another job. It's full time. I don't have a lot of free hours. If it turns out that the public can't, if they fill up the 2 hours that I scheduled each week and stuff, I'll schedule additional hours. But I can start with that and see how it goes. I'm also obviously willing to meet with people additional hours. So this is just the drop-in hours when people can, simply come down to City Hall during those times, and I'll be there. I do apologize again for being late this morning.
Thank you. Becky, do you have any non-homeless questions you want to ask Mike in this segment yourself?
I noticed that under previous mayors, like Catherine Byers and Celia Scott, that it was very common that if oral communications, the 30 minutes ended and there were two or three speakers, they would commonly say, for a motion to extend oral communications to include the last two speakers. This practice seems to have completely disappeared. Is this something that you would be willing to return to?
I think it sort of has to be done on a case-by-case basis to see, you know, how many people are there, how busy the agenda is, and so forth. I will note that when those folks were mayors, we were meeting until 2 o'clock in the morning more often than most people would like to have us do it. Then people argued that we were meeting when nobody could be awake to watch what we were up to. So I think it has to be balanced against the issue of how busy the agenda is. But, you know, if we have an agenda, which we often do, that doesn't look like it's going to go all night, I don't see any reason not to give people a couple more people time to speak.
I have a question which may impinge a little bit on Becky's territory, asking questions on homeless issues. But you're familiar with the downtown mediation report that was presented by, it was done by two mediators. Celia Scott was the person who originally pressed for it back in 1995. And do you have a copy of that, Becky? Maybe you have it with you.
Yeah, I do.
Let me show it to you. You may remember this. It was an alternative to the downtown ordinances, which had provoked a lot of controversy in 94 and continued to provoke controversy in a number of quarters. This kind of got buried under your mayorship, and it's never returned, though Emily Riley has expressed some interest in it at different points. Would you be willing to consider... What's your reaction to this? You pretty much have the same reaction you did when you saw it, when you read it the first time. I assume you did, because you were mayor when it came out.
I don't think it's full productive at this point, so I'm not much of a supporter of it at this point. No.
Mediation as a substitute for downtown ordinances, codes of conduct rather than police enforcement of forbidden zone rules and things like that.
I think the downtown ordinances serve us well generally. I'm not in favor of replacing them with anything else.
You'll probably ask us some more questions about that. Thank you, Mike, for running through this. Any other non-homeless questions, Becky?
No,
okay, cool.
And that was the first half of an interview with Mayor Mike Rotkin that Becky and I had with Becky Johnson and I had with the mayor on Tuesday morning. And I'm going to invite phone calls, if you'd like to call in, 427-3772, in case you have any reactions or questions. And I'm going to make some commentary myself on it. As I mentioned initially, I thought it was very important to get Mayor Rotkin on the record on these issues. And it was an interesting record that he presented. And I think it was good we covered as much ground as we did. I only thought we were going to have 15 minutes, hence I was sort of hustling him along. I wasn't trying to be rude to him. He tends to get loquacious, and we needed to get one thing after another done. A couple of things should be said. But perhaps somebody else will say them. It sounds like we have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hello, Robert.
Hi there.
Yeah, this is John joking.
Hey, John.
With the Human Rights Organization.
The Human Rights Organization, yes.
I just wanted to point out that at the very last City Council meeting on, what was it, the 14th?
Yes.
I believe oral communications was extended for the last couple of speakers.
That's true. Maybe Becky is having a positive influence on the mayor.
Yeah. I also wanted to announce again, in case people haven't heard yet, that there's going to be a free video showing of Faces of Homelessness happening December 20th. That's Monday. This coming Monday, December 20th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the room 22 of the Vets Hall, 846 Front Street. And we'll be discussing with Kate Wills about the pending federal lawsuit against the city of Santa Cruz regarding the sleeping ban, attempting to overturn the sleeping ban based on circumstances surrounding its enforcement.
Right on.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you later.
Hey, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, and in case you don't... I didn't mention this before, this show is being, I believe, rebroadcast illegally on the radio, at a radio on the table of the Huff Copwatch table in front of Borders Bookstore, even as we speak, down at Pacific and Soquel. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, this is Scott.
Hey, Scott, have you heard our mayor's latest statements?
Yeah, I've heard part of it, and I was just wondering if you could possibly... fast forward to the part where he says, yes, he'll agree to changing some policy to be less restrictive?
Well, it's kind of hard to do that, although it has been pointed out by the last caller that Rotkin did allow, I think it was three or four people, to comment beyond the oral communications half-hour deadline. That, you know, and that actually was quite an unusual move for Rotkin. He never moved to extend oral communication that I remember throughout the last... 3 years, or the last 2 years he was on the council, and I don't recall his doing it in his earlier councilships, do you?
No. As a matter of fact, he was always one of the people that would get belligerent if somebody else wanted to extend it, or, you know, back in the days when Celia Scott and Catherine Byers were on the council, and they would want to extend oral communications, especially when Celia was mayor. And Rocco would always be one of the council members that would complain about such an action.
Yeah, you asked the question, where did he, you know, suggest loosening things up? And I want to be honest about that. He did state that he would not consider as Fitzmaurice does, use of presumably the words Führer and flunky, as Fitzmaurice did, the basis for excluding someone from the room. He also stated, and this is a rather interesting statement he made, that a brief, fleeting Heil gesture from the side of the room he would not consider disruptive of a city council meeting. For him to go on record as he has is an interesting position, because the city council, of course, is in court for having me arrested for just that gesture. Now, he was not on the council at this time, but I anticipate subpoenaing him as an expert witness, because he was the mayor on four separate occasions, and I think he certainly should know what's disruptive and what's not at city council.
Right, and, you know, if you subpoena him and he says something different than what he said in this interview, then, you know, you're going to have to label him a waffler, I guess.
Along with Kerry, yes. In terms of other specifics that he's mellow on, and by the way, I don't think he really gave any ground on much of these things, but he, in not taking the Fitzmaurice, if you use any nasty words, or, you know, any even any critical words, we're going to evict you, even at oral communications, or the Riley position, if you say, fuck the police, we're going to turn off your mic, or wear a fuck
or
the police.
Or if you're not nice, we're going to turn off your mic.
Right, well, that did that happen?
Yes.
Do you remember a specific instance?
No, but I do remember that she did turn off people's mics that she thought weren't being nice.
Well, I know that she, when I took off my T-shirt and revealed "fuck the police" in my T-shirt, which was done not a gratuitous attack on the police, but because, as I mentioned before, a homeless person was cited twice for having that little message in his hat downtown,
right,
by the police department. She turned, not only turned off the mic, she directed the television cameras not to observe what was going on. She turned off the cameras. But I think that what was found was one of the arguments being used by the city attorney in the Heil-Krone lawsuit, currently now going back to the Judge White's court in San Jose, federal court, where I was arrested, is that...
You were arrested in federal court in San Jose?
That has yet to come, yes. No, I was arrested, of course, at the city council on March 12th of 2002. But the reason, I think the significance of what Rotkin is saying about, you know, I will let you say what you want at the mic, is that that is the main argument of the city attorney, that I was not at the mic, that I was off to the side making this silent gesture, and hence I was disrupting the meeting, that I could have done it from the mic, but I couldn't do it from the side of the room because that wasn't protected speech. So he I think, is sort of dovetailing with John Barisoni's legal argument in court, which I don't think holds any particular water, but who knows? The courts are pretty right-wing these days. It's hard to tell what they're going to decide.
Right. Well, especially once Bush starts pushing his appointments through.
And even before. Unfortunately, one of the decisions... One of the decisions of this the Court of Appeals that allows my case to be heard in court, not just summarily dismissed as it was by Judge White initially, is that the decorum rules are on their face constitutional. That is to say that the only thing I can argue is that they were inappropriately applied, that the decorum rules are okay, but that I wasn't really violating them. So it's unfortunate because the decorum rules state that it's inappropriate to use intemperate, personal, or slanderous remarks. And that is as subjective and as content-based a kind of criterion as I can imagine.
Right. But the question I had about your case is, do you have to have your case heard in front of this Judge White again?
You know, I don't know, but I suspect yes. I think you can only disqualify the judge at the very beginning of the proceeding. At least that's how it is here in the
criminal case. I mean, you would think
cases.
That once it gets thrown back to him, I mean, since he's already dismissed it, he is just going to, you know, hear the case and side with the city because he was willing to throw the case out to begin with.
Well, remember, though, this was the judge who found in favor of Cassandra Brown and Amy, what's Amy's last name? The two women who...
Right, that had the banners on
right,
Scotts
the
Valley.
The piece or the question banners around the Scotts Valley overpass, and the ruling was if you're going to ban those banners, you also have to ban the flags that are also being displayed in favor of Bush's policies of invading this country and that, you know. So White is not, he's not necessarily that conservative. It's just strange in this case he would reject the case out of hand, and I'm not entirely clear why he did that. I don't think he even had to explain why he did that. I don't think he did explain why he did that. Yes.
Well, maybe he just doesn't like Caltrans because he, you know, has to hit so many potholes when he drives to work.
It could be, but I can't comment on that. You know, you asked the question again, what else, you know, did Rotkin express any kind of, you know, expansion of public dialogue? I don't know if you heard the whole thing, but...
No, I tuned in probably for the last 10 minutes or so.
Uh-huh. By the way, for those who didn't tune in on, you know, at the beginning, you can go back and you can, it's
archived.
Exactly. Thank you. It is archived at www.huffsantacruz.org.
So the question I have about these archives, I've never gone to them.
Uh-huh.
But do they have as much dead air as your live show does?
I try to be quite accurate and replicate the entire dead air situation. It has to be very authentic. I don't believe in, you know, this kind of patching things up.
Oh, okay.
Other things I noticed that, you know, Rotkin, I kind of pushed him ahead. He's not going to allow questioning of the staff. He claims he's not going to adopt the Kennedy tactic of moving a consent agenda items.
Right,
to the
I heard
end of
that.
It. But, you know, he never objected to that when it was done by Kennedy. So, frankly, I'm
a little
skeptical.
Well, wasn't Fitzmaurice the one that started that as a sort of vendetta against you?
I know that Fitzmaurice did it. I think Sugar may have done it before Fitzmaurice.
Yeah, Sugar may have been the one that instigated that whole maneuver.
Right. For those who don't know, that's taking an item which normally is heard at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and throwing it off to 6 o'clock or 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and you don't even know when the item will be heard. You can't,
well,
you know.
I mean, at least with when Sugar was doing it, and I think also Fitzmaurice, if they said they were going to put it off to the end of the meeting, that's when they actually did it. They would do it at 11 o'clock. But Kennedy would wait for the person that pulled that item to leave the room.
Well, I know he did that.
And so if they were in between items and, say, you pulled it and you were nowhere to be seen, he would call up the item immediately.
Well, now, I only saw that done in one instance. Have you seen it done in more than one instance?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, because I know that he did do it in one instance with me. I thought it was a rather questionable tactic on his part. Not questionable, obviously. It was an exclusionary tactic that had to do with eliminating comment from a particular disfavored member of the public. The other thing is, an interesting comment Rotkin made was he said, I've never used language from the microphone to disrupt the council meeting. It's interesting, if you want to go back and look at Rotkin's history, he tried to have me arrested repeatedly for using the names of city council members in the early 90s. He insisted not only that could you not address city council members at that time, he insisted you could not speak their names in a critical fashion. So he's not quite remembering what he used to do, and I mean, I'm glad if he's not doing that anymore. He says he's not going to do that anymore. But
well, the time you tried to give him the Golden Toilet Seat Award, too, you wanted to have something, you wanted you forced out of the council chamber or something.
Well, actually, that was Sugar. That was in the back of the room. I tried to bring the Golden Potty Award into the chambers for their failure to allow bathrooms to be opened, and Sugar had Sergeant Baker inform me that I would be arrested if I walked into the chambers with this gift-wrapped, gold-plated porta-potty for him. It was a minor, it wasn't a porta-potty, it was a little portable wooden toilet stool. But, no, Rotkin did, you know, he did egg on Kennedy. You can hear him egging on Kennedy on January of this last year, after Michael Parenti at the city council meeting where Kennedy was not allowing the... Are you there? That looks like we're losing you. But I'll go on and talking about this. Scott, call back if you'd like. In the council meeting where there was quite a large demonstration out front about the sleeping ban, a number of people came from the One Dance Summit, it was called, and we had numerous prestigious sort of lefties who were talking about the importance of homeless human rights. They weren't allowed to speak at oral communications because Kennedy had moved oral communications to a later time in the afternoon. And they weren't allowed to no agenda item was put on, so they couldn't talk on the agenda. So we stood silently with signs, and Kennedy started insisting that the signs were disruptive as we moved around the room once with our signs. And Michael Parenti turned to the council, and he said very softly into the mic, "It's not disruptive. No, it's not. You know it's not." At which point, Rotkin turned to Kennedy and said, "Scott, you don't have to take that kind of crap." And Kennedy then said, This is your first warning, and he indeed gave out a number of warnings to people by name, claiming that those warnings were cumulative. And that's another thing Rotkin commented on in this interview. He would accept the Kennedy standard that you can give cumulative warnings from meeting to meeting. If you don't like what somebody does in one meeting, then you can hold it against them at the next meeting. If somebody spoke at one meeting, then you can say they can't speak at the next meeting unless there are so few speakers as to allow them to be able to get in while everybody else goes first. My understanding from Terry Frank of the First Amendment Coalition via Thomas Levitt, who looked into this matter, is that this is a violation of the Brown Act, that where every meeting essentially is a new deal. You can't kind of hold things against people from prior meetings. Certainly, if a person is disruptive of a meeting at any particular time and something rises to that standard, you can order them to leave, and if they refuse to leave, you can have them arrested, and if you can show it in court that they are disruptive, then you can have them convicted. In all the cases where I have been ordered out of chambers and refused to go, because I believe it's my right to participate, I've never been even, in the last few years, I've never even been charged with the charges that the mayors have used to get me out of the chambers and have me taken away in handcuffs. The DA just doesn't think that they're meritorious charges, so he doesn't file them. But they've never been convicted of anything either. In the old days when I was actually, when they actually took me to court on this stuff, I wasn't convicted. I've never been convicted of a misdemeanor around any of these issues. So I'm innocent. I didn't do it. I wasn't there at the time. And on top of that, I'm a good guy. So we're talking about Michael Rotkin and the interview that I had with him 2 days ago. And what's he going to be like as mayor on the city council? He did acknowledge that there's no cannabis distribution center in Santa Cruz. But he also gave no indication that he was going to make any changes in this, simply going through his usual song and dance about, oh, bring me a proposal. When in fact, he also claimed, which I felt was an unusual claim since I've heard the opposite from Kate Wells and Andrea Tischler, that he has not been contacted by either of these people, and both of them have told me that they have. So there's two different stories here coming from different folks. He's not going to allow questioning of the staff. I think I mentioned that before, which, of course, since he relies on the staff and since he believes in letting the staff pretty much run things, that's certainly no surprise. One of the things I was concerned about and that I mentioned at the last council meeting was the tendency of members of the city council, particularly Fitzmaurice, who still does it and who did it on Tuesday night, the tendency of Fitzmaurice to intimidate people in the audience by threatening to have them arrested, evicted, or reprimanded if they say anything, if they make any gestures or motions, particularly if that happens when somebody else is speaking. Now, there's an argument that you certainly want people to feel free to speak and not be intimidated. But there's also a point that if you're in a public gathering, which this is, that people in the audience, provided they don't stop the speaker physically from proceeding, have the right to make natural responses, either by applauding or by booing. And the idea that you can applause is okay, but boos are not, which has been the practice under Riley, I think to some extent under Sugar, and certainly under Fitzmaurice, and to some extent Kennedy, is not acceptable in a city council meeting, however welcoming an environment you want to make it. It's kind of like welcoming tourists to the downtown by removing all the homeless people. You don't want them to see the negatives, the warts, the darker side of things. I don't imply that homeless people are warts, but obviously people who are poor and needy are not the kind of things that Christmas shoppers necessarily want to see as they go and, you know, squander all their money on expensive knickknacks in Santa Cruz. And the same thing is true at city council. People don't want to hear, certainly the council members don't like to hear the boos. Now, Rotkin said he would allow boos for people on the council, but not people in the audience, which I think is, you know, half right, but doesn't really go there. And again, the problem is he can say all this stuff, but if you look at his record in the past, on most of these issues, it doesn't show that he opposed any of the mayors who tried to repress on these issues. He doesn't want to allow members of the public to put items on the city council agenda. He does not want to allow people to video from behind the podium as they were used to do, and he claims some of that was disruptive. I don't think he or anyone else can cite one instance where that was disrupted. This is fanciful talk that supports arbitrary decisions made by Fitzmaurice vindictively after Fitzmaurice and the rest of the council was targeted with the so-called coffee clatch. And the coffee clatch was the protest that I, Becky Johnson, Bernard Klitzner, and a number of homeless people staged in the winter of 2000-2001 when Fitzmaurice became mayor, and it became clear, as it is this winter, with Rodkin mayor, there was going to be no expansion of shelter, no end to the sleeping ban, and no end to the homeless death toll. And that's, of course, what we're facing out there tonight. And that, of course, is really the key. And perhaps, although I don't think we're going to do it tonight, but we're going to do it on Sunday. We're going to play the rest of the interview where Becky Johnson picks up questions around homeless issues. And Becky is much less forgiving or a patient with Rodkin than I am. In terms of at least how I presented myself at that meeting with him, she goes at him with all guns firing. And it's very interesting to hear and instructive, and I invite you to tune in for that. But let's hear a little music now, and then we'll go back to, I think we'll return to the Heil Krohn case for a little while, where you actually be able to hear that arrest 2 years ago where I was arrested for a silent gesture, and it is now going to federal court.
It's the people who made America great. It's the people who are the electorate. My people gave me Florida on a silver plate. I trust the people. Oh, the people they earn with the sweat of their toil. Sometimes the people, the earth do despoil. They do it with petroleum oil. I trust the people. I trust the people through and through. I don't trust the government, and neither should you. I trust the people compassionately. Now I'm the government.
Can I trust me?
Now the people know that forests are not just scenery. My people, they want to save every green tree so they can sell it for green money to help re-elect me. I trust the people. Government, and neither should you. I trust the people compassionately. Now I'm the government. Can you trust me? Oh, the people, they stand with a patriot's pride. Let justice prevail the whole country wide, as long as the justices are on my side. I trust the people.
Well, maybe not all of them.
I trust the people.
Well, not those blacks in Florida.
I trust the people.
And that was I Trust the People, another selection from Hail to the Thief 2. This is Free Radio, streaming on the net, www.freakradio.org, call in number 427-3772. I just had a caller asking me to comment on the Metro hate cartoon by DiCenzo. I will do that, actually, when I have the cartoon on the studio with me. I don't, and I'll be happy to talk about it on Sunday when the show returns in the morning. as I will to play the second half of the Rotkin interview. And I'm also I'm going to leave the Heil-Krohn case for a while. It's all about me, and I'm a fascinating subject, but other subjects are perhaps more pressing. Here's a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert, this is Walt.
Hey, Walt. You're on
the
air.
Hey, nice show.
Hey, thank you.
It's good to hear your voice on the radio.
Well, thank you. I'm good to be talking on the radio.
Yeah. I just wanted to call and wish you happy holidays and, just talk about things.
Okay. Is there anything particular you want to talk about on the air? I appreciate the season greetings.
Yeah, I don't know if it really is applicable. I've been reading a lot about, just social issues and things like that. And, I'm just observing what's going on around me and not impressed, really, with generally how the government's handling issues and things. I don't know. I could get more specific than that, but generally that's what's going on.
Okay, well, I'll accept that, and feel free to call back when you want to get more specific.
Okay, hey, have a good show.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, last Sunday I played a lot of tape from Human Rights Hypocrisy Day. That's where Mayor Rotkin and a number of other mayors read the UN Declaration of Human Rights while doing nothing about human rights abuses in Santa Cruz. This was under the auspices of the UN Association and WILP to some extent. I think an Amnesty International speaker was there. They were all real big on the theoretics of it all, the theory of human rights, but didn't have too much to do with the practice in Santa Cruz, which is what we're all about at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Check out the table in front of Borders if you want to get more details and sign some of the petitions we're pushing for. Maybe join up and actually start doing some direct actions. There was one speaker. They allowed kind of an open mic at the end of their shindig, did the Human Rights Day folks, and who were kind of hosting the Human Rights Day hypocrites, the mayor of Santa Cruz and the mayor of Scotts Valley and all the rest of these political officials. But there was one homeless man who came up to speak, and this is what he said.
Yes, one last speaker.
On behalf of humanity, I have two riddles, and then you don't have to answer because you may not know. The first one is, what is the similarity between Buddha, Muhammad, and Jesus? And the answer is, they were all homeless. The second riddle is, what is the difference between a farmer, a doctor, and a janitor? And the answer is the pay. The similarity is, they all save our lives. I've been to Catholic Charities. They have no hot water for homeless people. 100 years ago or more, in 1847, the Mexicans were beaten for bringing dirty clothes to the church. I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional, but now the Catholic Charities is turning out dirty people onto the streets. That's it.
Stay with it, Frank Grant.
And thank you, everybody.
A little sour note for the politically correct festivities Friday noon in front of the county building, the courthouse. Here's some more interviews from the streets, and if you want to call in with comments, now's the time to do it, 427-3772.
Ten to one. I'm in San Lorenzo Park, a little bit nippy, but the sun's out, and it's... December 1st, Wednesday, and we have a group of people here who have, they had a rather rude awakening last night in front of the post office. We're talking with
Eric.
And Eric, what happened?
He can tell you more. He knows exactly what happened.
We were laying there sleeping, and the dang cops, like at 2 o'clock in the morning, and when it was freezing cold, come and put a light in my eyes and said, get up. They didn't ask for IDs. They weren't going to give us tickets. That was the cool part. But it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you know? The coffee shops, there's nowhere to run to. Like, I go out and get up at that morning, and I go to the fucking coffee shop to, like, be warm and drink coffee, and I'm allowed to stay there, and I read the paper. I do it every single morning if I can't be in a hotel, and I don't have money, you know, so I don't get to go to a hotel very often. And we woke up, and then finally, Free shows up, and he's like, you know, this is blah, 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 blah. He says he's an activist, but, you know, I've never seen him be an activist in anything except running his mouth. Free. I know you know him, but he wasn't in any of our stuff.
Black guy?
Yeah. I didn't see him anywhere at all that stuff we did last year. If he wants to be so vocal, he should have shown up. But he starts getting loud, so I'm like, okay. And finally, like, each one showed up, and they said they were the superior. And I said, I know better than that. I know the superiors. And I slept right there for 2 weeks. We know every cop in this town, and all you guys are new. It's about time you pull in your superiors because you're fucking with us, and it's not going to happen. I said, I may not be sleeping here when I'm done, but I want to talk to friggin', you know, Baker or whatever. And I start lighting up like, whoa, he knows these cops.
And Baker.
And it just kind of turned into this big episode, you know. And all of a sudden, finally, that his name's like Hippo
Flippo
shows up in the state
Sergeant Flippo.
State vehicle, you know. No, this was the that one I saw it. His name had it was this cop I know, and we were talking, and like I started respecting him, and I said, you know, we used to sleep here, you know, blah blah blah. He says the postmaster lady doesn't want us there ever again. Like,
did she have a specific reason that he told you?
Tell us. He says it's on contract. They just signed a thing somewhere in one of the laws here in town that with them, that the state people can mess with the federal property, and we can't sleep there anymore.
How many of you were there?
Like a dozen.
And how many?
We were all asleep. We weren't like sitting there trying to like break the law. There was nobody drinking or anything. It was cold.
How many police showed up?
First one, then, you know, they doubled and they doubled and they doubled because they thought there was about to be a problem. And I guess they were letting people out of the vets hall. There was like 40 or 50 people in front of the vets hall. I don't know why, but they were all like homeless. I don't know why they were there. But they ran us off. Yeah, like, well, there was all these cool people out front of there. And then...
How long have you been sleeping there, Tex, before then?
Every year for 5 years when I didn't have a place to stay.
And this time you've been in town for...
Huh?
How long have you been in town this time?
Like... 10 days, 12 days?
You, for the last 10 days, you've been in front of the post office?
No, like I've stayed there 4 nights out of all that.
There's been no problem, because I heard there was a problem in front of the post office a couple of weeks ago. They did something similar.
They'd wake us up in the morning and tell us to go.
But they wouldn't in the middle of the night?
No. Like 5:30, we knew we were supposed to be gone, or 6.
Anybody else get hassled in front of the post office last night?
You did. Well, this guy hassled me at 3 in the morning.
Oh, we went hassling and everybody was sleeping after the cops hassled us. We thought we'd get the town in a little bit of an uproar and something might happen, and they had to do their jobs instead of waking us up. Freaking way up on the hill by the freeway, dude. Like on an incline. I did not sleep very well at all, and I woke up with my sleeping bag soaked.
Did anybody know the name of the guy who froze to death at City Hall?
No.
Or who he was?
Somebody else did it this morning, too.
Oh, really? Yeah. Tell me about that.
I don't know. We just heard somebody's rumors going around. A while ago, the fire trucks and ambulance were running around, and somebody, I guess, died.
You heard that specifically from somebody?
Yeah. But we got to be...
Okay. Thank you, Tex. Talking with...
No, I'm good.
Just 3 times I woke you.
Yeah.
But this is a while ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
They woke me up, like, 3 times...
Same police officers or different?
Same cop.
And where was it?
I don't remember.
In this one.
But they woke me up like 3 times just to wake me up, basically. I asked them why and they didn't give me a reason.
They're training you so you don't sleep at night. You see, it's illegal in Santa Cruz to sleep. They're trying to help you out.
But they never made me leave. It was shitty, though. It was cold. They kept making me get up and pack everything up, and then they'd let me stay there. It was shitty.
How many police?
Just one.
You know his name?
No.
Thanks. And you want to give your name? We'll call you Anon. Thanks, Anon.
And had no confirmation of that additional death that was mentioned as a possibility where an ambulance arrived downtown. Anybody has any information on deaths other than Robert Wagner in the last month, please give a call to 423-HUFF. I'd like to know what's going on with that. In this next interview, you hear Wagner being described as Robert Livingston by a person who apparently knew him but didn't know his name right, or at least that was what came out of this.
So the man who died on Monday was named Robert Nicholson, and
Nicholson, rather.
I'm told he was a nice guy. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. I'd call him a nice guy, sure.
So you knew him for how long?
I knew him for 5 years or so, I'd say.
Was he mostly outside? Did he have his own place to live?
Yeah, he liked to be outside. He always liked to be in a tent or outside. He didn't like being in any program or anything like that. Because he liked to drink, and they won't let you drink at the Armory. They won't let you be intoxicated. Have to stay sober.
Some rumor I heard in the park, maybe you can advise me if it was true, that his blanket got taken that night, or do you have any sense of what happened?
Well, I'm not really actually sure that Bob is the guy that they found, but, you know, I'm sketchy on the details myself. I don't really know.
Why do you think it was Robert Nicholson?
Because that's what the rumor was at the soup kitchen.
And so Robert Wagner was the actual name of the person who died.
Sort of hang around the library and civic center and city hall and such, and that's who they said it was. And that's, you know, I don't have an official confirmation that it was Bob. But
right. As of today, they haven't really released the name of his, I guess they're pending a notification of next of kin or something.
So I want to qualify all this by mentioning that I don't have it.
I'm dead. I'm
official source, right? I didn't get this out of an obituary in the newspaper or some official source. It's just rumor at the soup kitchen. That's all.
Do you think there's any link between whoever this guy is, his death, and the way facilities are available to people, the sleeping ban enforcement, that sort of thing? In other words, if the laws change, would the situation improve for people outside as far as the death rate goes?
As far as the death rate goes, jeez. I don't know. We're all dead meat waiting to happen. The rate's only going to go up because there's more people. So whether you're indoors or outdoors... You're on your own.
Hear that. Do you want to say who you are?
I'm just an individual who shoots his mouth off too much.
No problem. Thank you, man.
I'm in front of the Union Cafe, about 15 to...
We're talking with...
My name's Chuck.
Chuck, you're a man with a rather nice-looking walking stick. You have a hefty backpack and a rather... Well, you look like you got your thermals are on, and you got your hooded garment. Ready for the cold weather?
Yes, I am.
Were you ready for the police visit last night at the post office?
No, I wasn't. I was kind of surprised when they showed up around 2 o'clock in the morning. I was under the impression that we had permission to sleep there. It's a warmer place than most in this time of year, and it's sheltered from the rain. And the police showed up and told us that we couldn't be there. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, we packed up our things and left. Eventually.
How many were you?
There was probably close to a dozen of us there.
Did they give you another place to go?
No, they had no suggestions whatsoever. They said we couldn't be there.
Did they say why?
They said simply, the reason they gave is because they've had problems with people getting in fights over sleeping spots.
Now, did you notice any such fights?
Absolutely not. Everyone there makes sure that everyone is at peace with each other, and we have we make sure that everyone has a place to sleep, and we make sure that everything that we bring with us, we leave with as well.
And what is your name?
Chuck.
And Chuck, how long have you been sleeping, or how long had you been sleeping at that spot?
Probably about a week now.
Did you notice any fights?
No.
There's drunken rages?
Nothing.
Public urination?
Nothing, no.
Frightening the horses?
What now?
Yes. Well, so in other words, you didn't notice any particular behavior out of the way, did? How many police officers were there to make sure that you didn't attack the postman?
We had, I believe, one officer showed up originally, and shortly was followed by some backup. A woman who started swearing at all of us.
Wendy Vines, perhaps? Tall, blonde?
No, it wasn't. It was a short, dark-haired woman.
In dark blue or light blue?
Dark blue. And she used a lot of words I really didn't think were necessary.
Such as?
I think she said fuck you to one of the fellas there.
It was not an overture.
No, she just, I didn't understand why she was so angry. Someone stated that it needed to be a federal, like a ranger that needed to come to the federal property to tell us to leave, and that the city didn't have jurisdiction. And on top of the fact that we already had permission to be there, it was kind of a strange situation. But,
how do you know you had permission to be there? Had you actually talked to a postal official?
Well, I was told by this gentleman behind me here that...
The notorious Tex?
Yes, Tex. He's a great guy. He was informed by a postal employee who he thought was a postmaster, I guess wasn't, that we were allowed to sleep there. You know, we show up well after hours, and we're gone by 5 o'clock in the morning. There's no...
Have people been doing that regularly?
Yeah, there's been... we don't get in the way of the business of the post office. We're not there during business hours. So I just didn't understand what the problem was.
Did you present this explanation to any of the officers?
It didn't really matter at that point. They already gave us the ultimatum that we needed to leave no matter what the situation.
With no place to go.
That's right.
Did they say they'd received a complaint?
No. No, they hadn't. They said that... It was brought to the attention of the police force some time ago, and they were just like a routine kind of thing that they tell people.
Routine harassment.
Yeah, basically routine harassment. You know, you get
deprivation of basic civil rights.
Absolutely. You know, all we need to do is sleep, and that's it.
Nothing personal, just routine.
Yeah, absolutely, routine. It's a function of life. Absolutely.
We're going, as you may have heard, we're going to be doing a vigil, a candlelight.
And I would go on with that, but I have a caller on the line. Hi, caller. Are you there? Are you still there? Hello? Oh, boy. I think I had a caller on the line, but looks like I've lost him. Hello? I think not. So I'm going to try to get a hold of that caller, I should say, that person again. And what we're going to be talking about is the Jerry Henry court hearing coming up at 10 a.m. tomorrow in Department 2. So I'm going to see if I... And it looks like we've got his answering machine. I think we probably had him on the line, but unfortunately we've lost him. One more time. I'm going to try to get through. And it looks like we are getting a ring here.
Yeah, keep on hanging up on me, guy.
Hey, we got you. Hey there.
Yeah.
So Richard Quigley, former sheriff candidate, United States Freedom Fight web maintainer, a talk show host at KSCO, and unusual helmet wearer on your motorcycle. You're also going to be attending the hearing of Jerry Henry tomorrow at 10 a.m. in Department 2?
Yeah.
Now, what can you? You talked a little bit about that on Sunday. Can you kind of give us a brief synopsis again of what's coming up and what we should be looking for?
Well, keeping in mind that I can barely hear you as I'm talking, barely.
I can hear you.
What's going on tomorrow is that the DA wants to prosecute Jerry Henry for being, for being in the Chavez Center there at Rancho Del Mar, and They've trumped up a bunch of charges against him. False arrests, repeated false arrests for 602.1. You know, that catch-all intentional interference with the business BS. And tomorrow they're going to be having a hearing on the most recent of the charges, which are going to give the judge a real good look at exactly what the hell is going on. And It should be probably one of the more important days in the history of this kind of a fight in the courts in Santa Cruz.
What he has his own attorneys, right? They're going to be covering this.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
He has his own attorneys.
Yes, he found a law firm up in San Francisco, Tier 5, I believe it is. Tony Serra's group. And there's a young woman up there that's handling his case, and I swear to you, I can't remember her name right now. But, man, she does understand civil liberties, and she does understand this kind of case. And she's going to be ripping some prosecutor butt tomorrow, I anticipate.
So what is the issue that's going to be coming up? He was held on $25,000 bail, and then the bail was for essentially a trivial kind of charge, interfering with a business, what, by voodoo from the outside? How did he interfere with the coffee roasting company business in the actress?
Well, they're misapplying the statute. They're trying to make intentional interference with a business because it starts off as Penal Code 602, which is where all the trespassing is held. They're trying to make it a trespass charge because the one they used to use for this kind of abuse has been ruled on so many times by the higher courts that they can't use it this way, that now they're using this new one, this 602.1. And I say new, it's about 6 years old. And so they're just beating it up because they don't have enough case law to hold them down. So it's basically just making shit up. I don't know any other way to say it.
So, Jerry, has he been convicted of this before? I know he was convicted of, was it public nuisance before? He was convicted, and that's still going on appeal in the same place at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center?
Yeah, again, I can barely hear what you're saying. This has got to sound like a real stupid conversation.
No. Let me say it again more loudly. He was convicted before of some charges. What were they, and how does that influence this situation?
Well, they charged him with a bunch of 602.1s, the other one was disturbing the peace because they didn't like the way that he reacted to being arrested for 602.1. And, of course, the 602.1s all went away. I don't remember if he was convicted on them or not, but they didn't clear appeal. And so he ended up with just this disturbing the peace charges, which is they were also bogus and trumped up, but there wasn't anything that could be done about that. And so they banished him from the area for like 3 years. And then upon his return, the first thing that happened was within just a week or two, the manager of the Aptos Roasting Company assaulted him and started everything up all over again.
He's not the only one that's faced this kind of problem. I understand Scott Rhodes, his aide, Joshua, another aide, you, Jeff Hickey, a friend of his, have all faced the ire of Amy Christie, the sergeant nearby, the deputy,
yeah,
and also of the roasting company.
Yeah, the sheriff's department has convinced the businesses that they can just break this charge out and arrest anybody, and they'll take us into, they'll write the tickets and orders out of the place under threat of taking us to jail for an ongoing violation. And with Jerry, because he's been there more times, because he's the object of their obsession, they decided to put him on trial, but they didn't try Scott Rhodes. Rhodes and myself and Scott and Joshua and all these guys have all been banished from the Aptos Roasting Company. We're not even allowed to walk through the door, according to them. I mean, that's their notion. If I had the time to deal with it, I'd walk in there any goddamn time I want because they're open to the public. And they're trying to use criminal law to accomplish a civil remedy, which is basically a restraining order, which they can't get because there's no justification for it. So it's just a perversion of law carried out by a group of cops that are working at the behest of the Chamber of Commerce, who's trying to act out this social engineering plan they have for Aptos.
Get rid of the riffraff, eh?
Yeah, whatever the hell that is. And it's anybody that the Chamber deems riffraff.
Now, you're going to be down there at 10 o'clock tomorrow in Department 2?
There's going to be, all of us will be down there to see what's going to happen. I mean, there's going to be history made tomorrow.
And what exactly is the issue? What are they? He's the defendant? What is the hearing on?
The hearing is to get rid of the stay-away order from the shopping center and to address the last two charges that were brought against him and have those dismissed. And my personal feeling is everything's going to get thrown out tomorrow, but I could be wrong about that.
So this is in the court of the infamous Barracuda Barton?
Not by my standards, my friend.
Yeah, you like him, but we'll see if he meets your standards, or meets my standards, I should say.
Well, I don't know what it takes to meet yours, but he's already demonstrated to me an incredible ability to go against the political pressures and follow the law. I got a lot of confidence in him. I really do. He's probably one of the most honorable and courageous jurists they have on the bench in this county, in my humble opinion.
Let's talk about that next time because I'm running out of time. Richard Quigley, thank you for being available, and thanks for your patience and waiting on the line.
No problem, my friend.
All right, man.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Richard is back on the air, at least occasionally, as I'm not sure if he's a guest host or a ghostly host or an occasional host at KSCO. He was on Tuesday, anyway, talking over there. But I think people still need to call into KSCO if you want Richard Quigley to speak, and leave a message at 475-1080 that you'd like to see him back on the air over there. I'm rolling out of here pretty shortly. I'm going to play another cut from this Hail to the Thief 2, and then I'm going to be on my way. I invite you to come on down to court tomorrow. Huff is planning a potential protest at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. I've contacted Colleen Crosby, who's the owner of the coffee roasting company, to ask her if, you know, what the heck is going on out there, and I have not been able to get a call back from her, but hopefully she will call back. After all, she's a big advocate of free trade coffee and all that sort of thing. So how about some free human rights for the locals, as well as some politically correct causes for the beleaguered natives abroad? We'll see if that happens. And I hope you return on Sunday. We can talk about it some more. Come on down to court tomorrow, and we'll talk about it there. Peace Friday is happening, I guess, probably 4 o'clock down at Ocean and Water Streets. You want to come on down and say no to the Iraqi war. Let's do it together. Meantime, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF. Thanks.
Folks in Florida cast their votes, as all good citizens do. In West Palm Beach, the ballot read to vote for one punch, too. Once you punched it, punch it again, gave it another good push. You thought you voted for Gore, surprise, you cast your ballot for Bush. In Florida, the sun is shining. It's early bird dining and early to bed. The Republicans said stop the counting. Force total and mounting. Let's quit while we're ahead. Catherine Harris hit the switch and this vote certifying. Off the Democrats went to court like hell, the Republicans cried. 100 million votes were cast, including yours and mine. But in the end, the only ones that counted numbered 9. In Florida, the sun is shining. It's early bird dining and early to bed. The Republicans said stop the counting. Gore's total and mounting. Let's quit while we're ahead. The boys and girls in black robes met and held a tug of war. When they finally cast their votes, Bush won it 5-4. 5 judges selected the president. 5 judges had their way. And I expect they'll all retire to Florida someday. In Florida, the sun is shining. It's early bird dining and early to bed. The Republicans said stop the counting. Gore's total and mounting. Let's quit while we're ahead. So they did. Thank you.
come home no more. Thank you.